we'll continue this conversation about the 60s and about black culture in the 60s. Because of all I mean, I understand that Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X didn't have, they had different opinions on aspects of life. Martin Luther King is like, one of the, probably the positive ways, not really the positive way, because Malcolm X had his positive ways too. But I'll turn the other cheek, man, on how, you know, dealing with other people and white and the white man itself. Mm-hmm. How did it affect, okay, in the 1960s, Malcolm had, his words were so powerful. How did it affect the 60s? And how did the people look at Malcolm X? They look at him as like a beast from hell beyond, or did they look at him as a nice man?
I think you've answered your own question, because he was looked at in both ways.
And I'll tell you who.
You'll be able to see it in the picture of what actually happened to me, because I was an advocate of Malcolm. I had a lot of opinions about King, and I did believe in nonviolence. I'm not a violent man. I never have been a violent man, you know, but it was one of the things that I learned during the 60s and it was one of the things that I accrued the knowledge of being violent in the 60s. Although I was not a violent man and have never performed any violent acts, say having a fight with Fonny Boy or somebody like that. Right. And I was even a gang member, and I was the head of a gang, and never had myself into a situation where I actually had to hurt somebody. But from the time that I was a gang member, I began to recognize that although I was not a violent person and abhorred violence, that it was a necessary evil. It was something that I learned in Harlem, in the streets of Harlem. If I did not have any backup, I could have been in the worlds of trouble in various situations. So I saw it as an advantage to be a gang member. Not really wanting to be, but realizing that, hey man, you know, it's, you know, where I am and what have you, so, you know, so I took that over and I brought that over to the situation where we were in the 60s with Malcolm and King. I, like King, was nonviolent and bore witness to the fact that I was not, but my gang member days had given me the concept and the understanding that if I don't at least let people know that, you know, I will fight you, you know, they won't back up off. That was my personal experience in Harlem, New York. Because when I was a kid in Harlem, man, I was like one of the smallest dudes on the block. And, if it had not been for the fact that I was the brother of a very famous female in Harlem at that time, my sister, her name was Lefty, and she was about one of the meanest people in the streets. But she wasn't mean, she was just strong. She, you know, I can remember her having a fight with this dude that everybody on the block called him Joe Lewis. She kicked his ass. She could beat every male in the block. In basketball, baseball, anything. And as her brother, I was protected. And I got tired of that. So I became, you know, I started saying, well, I'm going to be who I am. And I changed my name to Duke. And I became, I joined the Enchanters. And, well, I didn't join, I was drafted. But that gave me the sense of knowing what violence was about. And whether, even though you are not violent, you need an army. Dig what I'm saying? Right. If you ain't violent, you need an army more than the dude that takes on his own personal protection.
Right.
You see? And every government doesn't. You know, you don't find everybody, you know, in the army. Even in the army, everybody ain't a fighter. You know, you got secretaries, you got truck drivers, you know, you got the whole thing in the army. But it's all based on, and supposed to be for the protection of the people and to fight wars. That's main reason that an army exists is to protect people and to fight wars. Okay, so that was the philosophy that I was at. I didn't believe that the white man was the devil. So I didn't want to become a part of the Nation of Islam. And also the Nation of Islam was talking about if you were not Muslim, you wasn't down. And those were the two things that I wasn't in agreement with. So in the circles when we used to have the conversations, and some of my homeboys were saying, well, yeah, man, we need to get down with the Nation and so on, I would come up and say, man, I ain't getting down with the Nation. They talking about, you know, if you ain't Muslim, you know, you ain't down. I thought this thing was about, you know, all black people, you know. And these are the type of conversations we had. And, you know, we didn't, as I said, we didn't always agree.
Right.
You know, but my position was that a lot of the stuff that the Nation of Islam was talking about, when they talk about how devious the white man was and everything else, I agree with. But I'm not in agreement with every white person is the devil. And I'm not in agreement with that you got to be a Muslim in order for us to be united. So those were the two positions. And then you had your straight up Martin Luther King supporters, who was, I give you one guess, you guess, tell me who you could possibly guess were the followers of Martin Luther King versus me and my homeboys, my friends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents.
Parents.
Yep. I got married in 1962. By 1963, 1964, when, you know, me and my wife, we was straight into it. We was, you know, we was still in that group that I told you about that I was with Chief Bay. He finally formed a group called the Society of Ife, and the word Ife means life in Yoruba, which is a language in Nigeria. And we formed, and they said, look, which was one of the basic concepts of the Nation of Islam, was separate. Let's get the fuck out of here. Let's get our own land. Let's get our own shit. You understand what I'm saying? And fuck the white man. You know, and then if you want to roll on us, you know, roll, baby, because we're going to have something for you. That was basically what the Nation of Islam was talking about. That's basically what the Panthers was talking about. That's basically what the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was called SNCC, which was led by Stokely Carmichael and H. Rapp Brown. Basically, all that was in unity where most, except for Martin Luther King's movement, everybody else was like, let's do our own thing. Let's do something other than integrate with these people that don't want us to integrate with them, obviously, because they got dogs and shit on us and all that. It's obvious that they don't want us to be a part of their happening. And that does not mean that we're supposed to give up life and say, okay, you know, we're supposed to just relegate ourselves to a nothingness life as we have been doing from 1865 up to 1960. Was accepting whatever the white man said was our level, we'd accept it. Didn't think we could do any much better, you know. And here again, I'm not talking about everybody, you know. That's more or less what the group vibe was. But individuals of like my parents and various people like that was being very successful.
If you had a friend in the Black Panthers, right? Were they like at first, and like in 1967, I heard there was like a political party before they started as the Black Panthers.
Yes.
What made them the Black Panthers? What made them do the things they do?
You know, the same reason that we all was doing it. We were seeking a new way, a new political way, a new economical way, a new philosophical way to overcome the racism that had prevailed here in this country for so long.
Right.
And Malcolm was of the Panthers. I absolutely, Malcolm was the motivator of almost all of the different revolutionary organizations that arose out of the '60s, meaning the Panthers, Sunni Muslims, which didn't get as much recognition as the Panthers, but when I became a Muslim, a Sunni Muslim in 1969, we did something so profound that, you know, even to this day, I just sit down and I shake my head and I say, damn, that was a hell of a fine experience. We dropped out of the society. We became Muslim. We actually formed another government in this country, under the guidelines of this country, and formed another government and told them people just forget it. We had a mosque in Queens, in Brooklyn, in Manhattan. We had one in Washington, D.C. We had three in the state of Pennsylvania, the main one being in Philadelphia, three in the state of Jersey, one in the Bahamas, two in Canada. And we performed our own births. We made our own birth certificates. Like, okay, the government said that we had a birth certificate, so we just made two birth certificates and said, this one is ours. Fuck y'all. We're doing what y'all want us to do, but in turn, you know, and marriages, we didn't go down to the city hall to marry. We performed our own marriages. We challenged the United States of America and the state of New York to the fact that they had to accept us as a religious organization without any proof, without any documentation. They just got to do it because that is their law. So then what we did was, and this is what the Panthers was doing, and this is what the nation was, we were all just saying, man, we can't get a fair shake in this system, we're going to have our own system. And in that system, you know, we governed ourselves. I was considered a governor. The name was Wali. That means governor in Arabic. I was the governor of the state of Queens. Then we had, as I said, in each place that there was a mosque, we identified it as a state. We told them it was a mosque. In our minds, we saw it as a state. And I was just thinking about it just before you came in. We used to, we did things like, we had what we call food co-ops, where everybody in the community put up $20, and me and a couple of my sons and a couple of other brothers in the community would go down to in Manhattan. They had this place where all the food and everything comes in, and we got us a wholesale number so we could buy wholesale from them. And we used to walk up and down this big and purchase food for the whole community. And you cannot believe how much we was getting for each family for $20. Like, we was getting enough fruits and vegetables and stuff, like, for a 2-week period, where everybody was saying, damn, I got too much. And but we wasn't spending nowhere near what each individual would have to have spent going into the food markets and stuff. So we did little things like that. We also became very active in going into the prisons. And we forced the New York State Department to accept us without any documentation. And you got to realize that in this country, that's all this whole damn country is about, is pieces of paper. A piece of paper that says you certified to do this. A piece of paper that says you okay to do that. It's all about paper, you know, certifying your knowledge or your capacity or power and so on and so forth and so forth. And if you don't have that in this society, as far as they're concerned, you ain't shit. That's why I'm back in school at the age of 55. I've been a teacher all my life. But as far as this society is concerned, I'm not a teacher. Why? Because I don't have the piece of paper.
It's all about paper.
Dick. But to us, it was all about being for real and what we was about. The paper wasn't the important thing. The important thing was we identified ourselves as independent nations right here in this country. We were an independent nation. And New York City Department was forced to accept this fact. But